Today's show is brought to you by The Star City Murders, an amazing new film coming to video on demand, Apple TV, Amazon Prime Video, many other platforms on April 16th. That's right, The Star City Murders, produced and starring our very own Heath Sentazzo, a.k.a. Heath Solo. After three murders are committed in Star City, Detective Frank Brody and his team must stop a serial killer before he strikes again. However, the connection between the three victims could hit close to home. It's a race against time as Detective Brody has less than 48 hours before the suspect kills again. Starring our very own Heath Sentazzo, Michelle Lukes, Amy Mata, Jason Graham, and Tim Russ. Directed by Giles Andrews. Baby, this is it. We've been talking about it for years. It's the Star City Murders. So go over to Apple TV, iTunes, Amazon, look up Star City Murders, or just click the link in the show notes and pre-order it now. Welcome back, everyone, to Daily DVR. My name is Axel. You can find us at dvrpodcast.com. Become a patron at patreon.com/DVR. We're here today. It's me, Axel. We've got Heath, Andy, and Gina, all four of us here to talk about three things, which is Three Body Problem, baby. The Netflix series. I have read slash listened to all the books. I am the all-knowing person, which is a very strange thing to be. But Heath, Andy, and Gina are TV show watchers, and we're going to try to keep this to the Netflix show. I'm going to tell you, I'm not going to spoil you on anything from the books, but we are going to talk about the entire 8 episodes of the Netflix series. So if you have not watched all 8 episodes, pause this, come back after you've finished the first season, and then you can listen to us chat about it. So let's say hi to everyone. Gina, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Axel. Thanks for having me on to talk about this.
Oh, thank you for being here. Ando, how's it going out there in Minnesota?
Well, I'm fully hydrated and I'm ready to podcast, so let's go.
I knew it. Solo, how did you like that intro that Ando just did?
Well, I'm not hydrated, but I'm in Mexico hanging with Augie and we're having a great time. So
it's all about the water.
Yeah, tequila. There's no water. I have a little Don Julio 1942. It's fantastic.
All right. Well, a little background. I heard about Three Body Problem, the novel. I think it was maybe, I don't know. Actually, I should just ask Andy. Andy always remembers life better than I do. I don't know if Andy is going to remember. Like, I remember you texted me right after this.
You're putting a lot on
Andy.
And
when's Axel's anniversary? when was his child born?
Oh, boy.
I think it was about 5 years ago, maybe, when I heard about it and started listening to the first book. Maybe it was 4 years ago. There are three novels in the series. I just looked up on YouTube. The author's name is Lu Cixin, is how I guess this French guy told me how to pronounce it on YouTube. But there's three books. First book was originally published in 2008, and the first book is called The Three Body Problem. Then there's the, The Dark Forest is the second book. I should have this stuff up already on my old, thing there. Oh, right. So the series is called Remembrance of Earth's Past. The first book is The Three Body Problem. The second is The Dark Forest. And the third book is called Death's End. The plan for the TV show is to do 4 seasons because the third book is twice as long as the first two books. And it is, they're both crazy. from what I understand, the third and fourth seasons would encompass the third book. So far, obviously, we've all seen the first season on Netflix. I fell in love instantly. The basic hitch of this season and of the whole story, I was spoiled on. That's how I found out about the books. I read something where somebody wrote, there's this book series where a woman is really pissed off at the world and she basically invites aliens to invade Earth. And I thought, wow, that sounds fucking awesome. I want to know how does that happen? And so I started listening to the first book and then jumped right into the other two, which I suggest for everyone. If you liked this series on Netflix, I would definitely tell you to listen to the book because it's very, you can get right into it. It's very different. You'll see the differences and you'll love it. But it's also extremely technical, extremely sci-fi. And what Dan and Dave have done, I'll give my first impressions, is I think they did a very good job of translating this super complicated book that does not have a lot of deep characterization or explanation of motivations of characters or drama for that matter, or human emotion for that matter.
Besides
one character, it's just very technical and sci-fi, man. I don't know how to describe. I'm a huge fan of Arthur C. Clarke. Some people have said that Arthur C. Clarke has a similar, like a Kubrick type problem where there's not a lot of human emotion. Things seem cold. I would describe that as the writing style to be in that way, that it is very explanatory. A lot of times it's almost as if you're reading a manual, like someone's explaining something to you, then telling you a story. Does that make sense? But I think Dan and Dave did a great job. So that's my little intro. I love it so much. I'm really into it, but I'd like to hear from you all what you thought of this season and what you thought of this story. Gina, why don't you start us out? Are you generally a sci-fi? I mean, we know you love fantasy. We know you love Game of Thrones. Are you generally into sci-fi or?
I'll watch sci-fi shows, but to be honest, I don't read a lot of sci-fi. But Game of Thrones got me to read the books. That's more kind of fantasy. I am going to read these books. I would say Silos kind of. Well, yeah. I don't know how much it's sci-fi as opposed to,
I would call that firmly in the sci-fi.
Yeah,
category.
You think?
More like dystopian. It's sci-fi slash dystopian. I mean, this is
true.
Kind of potentially could be dystopian too, but so I'm into it. I enjoyed the first season. I do think it ended on kind of a not a very exciting note. Like,
agreed.
And I was like, okay. I mean, I guess now we have to wait. And I'm compelled enough to read the books, but it's like, I'm not dying for the second season because I think maybe that's partially because I'm going to read the books. But I love the casting. I love that we got some of our Game of Thrones favorites back in there. As I started seeing him pop up, I'm like, yay. I think there's potential for other former Game of Thrones folks to join us in the future seasons as well. I love the casting so far. The girl playing Jen, she's okay. I don't know. She's not very dynamic. And I think I'd like a little bit more dynamism in that character. For the most part, I think it's all pretty good casting. And, it's a wild concept. And I think we have a lot to get into in terms of, like, are the Santi, are they lying about knowing what lying is? How did all the stuff get on this planet? Tatiana, is she really just human? I think there are a lot of questions we have to get into today.
All right. And I will answer none of those questions.
We'll theorize while you sit back and
it's so hard. It's so hard. All right. Ando, what were your thoughts on this season and this TV show?
I really liked it a lot. I mean, I would almost say I loved it. It's like Gina said too, the ending is a little, I don't think flat is quite the right word. The season definitely peaks in episodes 4 and 5. I think those two episodes are just awesome TV, and the like 6, 7, and 8 almost feel like an epilogue and like coming next time kind of a thing, where it's more of a setup for the second season. So I thought that was a little clunky is not the right word, but it was a little strange because most TV shows don't peak in the middle of the season. They peak near the end. So I think that's took a little getting used to. I rewatched a bunch of it when I knew we were going to do this. So I liked the way it played better the second time I saw it. I didn't watch the whole thing, but you know what I mean? I love I can definitely tell that we're in Dan and Dave's world again. I like how one thing that really struck me is the difference between this being on Netflix and HBO. If it was HBO, I think like in this season, we got like 5 or 6, like, holy shit type moments, whether it's finding out that who sent the message or that she's actually one of the villains, or Mike Evans being knocked off right away, or some of the other people. Those would have been like season ending things. And this thing is so propulsive compared to something that would be on an HBO Dan and Dave kind of thing, where it was very slow build up. And this thing is just one thing after another, and it doesn't really slow down with the plot, which I'm not saying that is a bad thing about Game of Thrones. I think it's just a difference, because that's definitely more of a Netflix thing than an HBO thing, which it's a different, I don't know. It's hard to explain exactly what I'm talking about there, but I really, really liked it. I probably am going to read the books or listen to the books over the summer, because I'm definitely interested to see where it goes, because I'm obviously a massive not quite as big as you are, Axel, but I'm a pretty massive sci-fi fan as well. So overall, I really enjoyed it.
Nice. All right, Solo. It's your turn. You've waited patiently.
Well, I think we covered every topic. No, just kidding.
Bye, everybody.
All right. See ya. No, I'm not as I like sci-fi and fantasy, but I don't go out searching for it. I like it. That's not my big thing, but I enjoy a ton of sci-fi and fantasy. I knew absolutely nothing about this show. I think I saw one trailer, Dan and Dave, Three Body Problem. Axel posted something, gonna watch it. So I was like to my wife, hey, let's watch this. We burned through the 8 episodes over like 3 days. And then she's like, where are the other seasons? I go, no, it's a new show. She's like, what? She thought we had like 3 or 4 seasons. She didn't know it was new, because I'm responsible for pretty much most of the shows we watch. But honestly, I thought it was phenomenal. I mean, I have my problems with certain things. I thought for them to take a dense text or something that's very, you know, rocket scientist, to put it into the medium of, all right, Netflix binge show. It was very accelerated. It felt like, and with like Ando mentioned how episode 5 is a big thing in the last 3 episodes, but I love that. I love that it was different. I love the fact that it just came at us like 24 almost, Jack Bauer-ish. And I really liked these characters. Now, I don't know if it was because it was binged. This would have been nice for a week to week. Even at this pace, I'm with you. If this was on HBO or some, the season finale might have been, you know, the John Bradley death. Yeah. Like that's the thing. Like things were happening so early. I'm like, what the hell? I love slow burn, and I love shows that we have to think. But this was nice to get caught up in this world and to get it all. I think the only issue is because it was a binge, I feel like I wish it was week to week, because so we can talk about it and do a podcast on it and let it kind of and theorize. That's the only thing.
That would have been amazing if we could have done that.
And marinate on stuff a little more, because that's the only thing about, like, I love a good binge, but at the same time, it's like, it just flies by. And it's not like, you know, if this was week to week, we would have probably gone back and watched it another time or two and taken notes and like, you know, really kind of like teased out clues and things like that. Whereas this, it's just like, it's kind of like a brain dump and you know, you're just,
that was
kind of
one thing about, that was one thing I noticed about going back and watching a bunch of different episodes again for the second time. I picked up a lot more themes and just a lot more, it felt a lot more realized. And it's really a shame that it couldn't be a week to week thing.
And Ando, excellent. I think this could be one of those things where Netflix could have been the one network that's like, do what you want to do versus HBO. Let's do it for 8 seasons and make this a top notch show. We, you know, we don't know the behind the scenes. I bet you Netflix wrote a check and is like, do it how you want to do it. Dan and Dave were like, finally.
That's a great point. You know what, Solo? I was actually thinking about that because this show, even though it takes place worldwide and past the world too, right? It still felt kind of smaller than like Game of Thrones as far as the sets and the locations and all that kind of stuff to me.
More intimate, I think.
Yeah, thank you, Andy. It did feel more intimate. And I feel like Dan and Dave were almost like, man, we did that shit with Game of Thrones. We can't do that anymore. I just listened to a podcast with them, which actually wasn't very good. It was, that guy Josh Horowitz? He interviews people. It's a very popular podcast. It's Happy, Sad, Confused or something. I actually unsubscribed after listening to it because they just were like bullshitting and didn't really actually talk about anything.
Well, Dan and Dave have an open invitation to come on the DVR podcast network anytime.
Come on,
they want,
Dan and Dave. But they did kind of hint towards that by the end of Game of Thrones, they hadn't seen their families in years. And so when I think that the accelerated nature of this show, Andy, you made a fucking great point that it kind of peaks at episode 5 or 6, right? And you learn.
Yeah, I think 4 and 5 are the two that were the 5, especially because that's the boat slice. But the other thing I was thinking when Solo was talking there, I wonder if part of this too is they don't have to tread water because they know the ending. Famously with Game of Thrones, they didn't know how long they would have to wait for new material. And it turns out new material never came.
And let me
tell you, they have all the material, so they can just go at whatever pace they want.
That is a great point too, because let me tell you, I'm not going to preface everything by saying no spoiler. Just I'm not going to spoil anything. If I say it, trust me, it does. It's not spoiling anything. There is so much more shit and so much stuff that they cut out of the first book. And I'm not mad about it at all. Again, I think they did a really good job. But there is so much more shit that it even surprised me that when they got to episode 5 and Sophon is revealed, that's when they talk about what Sophon is, right? What the Sophons are. That's episode 5 when that's explained, right? And you see it in the sky.
Yeah, that's when they open the file at the end, that the file that's like the 200 petabytes or whatever it is.
And the proton is unfolded.
Yeah.
That once they got to that point, I thought, what the fuck are they going to do for the next 3 episodes? Because
is that the end of the first book?
It is. But also, as I learned from Bubba, listening to our friends Bubba and Catfish on the Double P Podcast Network are covering this, so subscribe to them.
Oh, they are? Oh,
yes.
Cool.
They just did the first 4 episodes in one episode, so they're going to do I think they're just going to do 2 episodes on it. But there's differences between the Chinese version of the book and the American version. In the American version of the book, the first, I don't know, 100 pages or however much it is dedicated towards the Cultural Revolution in China. And you learn all about what the struggles of our main character, what's her name again? Yi Wenji.
Dr. Yi.
We learn about her and her dad and all that, much more detail. Okay. Now, as a kind of end placeholder, whatever you call what do you call them? Book holders, whatever.
Bookends.
Thank you.
Placeholders as or a placeholder.
Place,
that's why
bookend,
I'm here.
Bookend. As a bookend to it, the end of the book is explaining what the Sophons are in about that many pages too. And I don't think it's a spoiler for me to say, and I'm itching to talk about this part, it's my favorite part of the book. You actually see it from the perspective of the aliens. And in the book, the aliens are not called, I can't even remember, what do they call them in the
Santi.
The Santi. They're called the Trisolarans. That's what they're called in the book. You get it? Three suns, so they're the Trisolarans. And what you get is the alien Trisolaran receiving the message and what they do after that and what happens on Trisolaris and how they react to receiving the message. And that includes the Sophon, the Sophons, and all that other stuff that goes into it and what their plan is and literally what their perspective is and who they are as a culture, as a people, all that kind of stuff. And the actual creation of the Sophons is, to me, the most interesting and fun part of that book. It's so fucking nuts. And the weird sci-fi and whether some of this stuff is theoretical physics or he just came up with it, I have no idea. But the things that happen and unfolding in different dimensions, and it's so technical again. It's like explained to you like a technical manual. So that, to me, that little part that they just show you, it takes up a big chunk of the end of the book. And the stuff that's included in episodes 6, 7, and 8, a lot of that stuff is actually from other books, stuff that they kind of remixed and brought into it. So I was excited to see that. I was like, okay, they didn't just make up a bunch of stuff, right? Because this is what people got upset with at Game of Thrones, which they had no choice but to do. But they actually kind of remixed stuff. And I think what they ended up doing was really cool. And especially the wall facer stuff, which is something that I was desperately hoping that they would, I wasn't sure they were even going to include it in the series because it's a very strange concept. What was your all reaction to that wall facer stuff?
Well, I think it makes sense, right? Because these are the people that have the ability to further the science past their own, and they want to take them out at any cost, which they were honestly trying to take them out even before the entire world was aware of them, though the entire world didn't realize they were trying to take out scientists for, you know, that it was aliens behind it. So, I mean, I think it makes sense, but it's also like, let's put a target on the back of these people that are our best hope to save the world.
I loved it just because it's such a interesting concept. Like, you even hear when Wade is on the plane at the end, right before the Sophon comes and talks to him, he's on the phone with somebody. He's like, well, it's General. I can't remember what the general's name is. It's the general. He gets whatever he wants because whatever. And just the having characters that can have basically unlimited power and don't have to answer anybody and not tell us what their plans are going to be. That concept is so crazy. And I think it could make for some really interesting things in the future where somebody's saying they need a herd of elephants or something. And they're like, what the hell is happening? I mean, not that that's going to happen, but just the possibilities of what that could mean in the future, I think, is leads to some very cool possibilities, I think.
Yeah, it's amazing because, all right, we got the concept of they're going to invade in 400 years. So what are we going to do? Are we you got the people who don't give an F, like, I'm going to live my life, whatever. You got the people who just, like, go crazy and just want to, you know. And then you got, of course, people that say, what can we do to prevent this in the future so our kids can survive? And it's almost like the Santee are just so smart because they're listening to everything they know. How far in advance do they know everything? So it's almost like they're flushing out, like, you're letting all the humans kind of work it out, where then you flush out the top-notch people, and then they become targets. It's almost like they knew it was going to play out that way, or that's what they wanted. I mean, it's a really cool cut, because if you're coming in 400 years, humans are probably going to – half of them are probably going to be gone, because we're going to all go crazy and start, you know, acting irrational, and there's just so much to tackle there. But to have these – top-notch people, and it's so frustrating because they're announcing it to the world, but the Santee probably know it already. And it's just like that's where I'm like I was getting so mad at Saul. Like, I got so frustrated with him because I know he's been, you know, he's kind of been on that. He just, you know, lost his best friend and lost another friend, and, you know, and he just, like, someone tried to kill you. A car came and killed your one night stand. And you got Kevlar jumpsuit on that Andy sent you from Minnesota, and it's, you know, but what yet kind of you want to leave on your own
solo.
I don't know. I figure you're getting ready for the end of the world. I'm like, you know, very rare am I yelling at a character on the TV because I know they can't hear me. But I'm just like, dude, you're so smart, but do you not care to live? Is that? I mean, I think there's more of a deep-rooted thing with him. I mean, he even wants to know why the assassin wanted to kill him. You know, he wanted to talk to him while he's on his, you know, in the hospital. And I'm just like, dude. And thank God that Kevlar vest or the jumpsuit. But I'm just like, do you want to die? You know, but I get it, where that's a lot of pressure. But I don't know if he realizes how freaking smart he is. Because, you know, when he says, like, you know, I'm 32 and I haven't contributed anything in science by now. You know, I'm no Sheldon Cooper. And I'm like, but dude, you're only 32, but I understand in the science world, that whole concept. But I'm like, this dude is really, you're the key to a lot of this. And it's like,
I've failed because I'm 32 and I haven't set my mark. And yet he's going to be the one that's, like, going to come up with the plan to save the world. You know it.
Yeah,
he's good.
It's kind of funny. You know, not everyone. He's going to peak at maybe more like 38. And so he's got a few years to figure this out. But I'm kind of wondering about, what about a breeding program? Like, these guys are going to be, you know, dead within the century. Do they have, like, a scouting, recruiting, and breeding program going on for the next generation of wall facers? Mm-hmm. Or are they going to cryogenically freeze these guys from time to time so they can live throughout the duration and still be around for the 400 years?
Like, except to be unthawed for 1 week to check on their mom and go to Wimbledon, right?
Yes. Not to be spoilery, but there is another television show that's going to get into this, and I'm not going to say which one, but it will.
You know, one of the other things that when you were talking there, Solo, about the stuff with Saul and not wanting to do, it's kind of a side part on that, but I loved how, like, the assistant and Clarence and everybody's like, when he says, I'm not a wall face, and they're like, right, sure you're not. And, like, they're laughing at him, and I was laughing. I thought that was actually, there's more humor stuff in this than I thought too. Yeah. So I like that whole wall facer thing I loved. And one other thing I was thinking of too, I was going to mention this when we started at the top. Part of what I really like this is similar to Game of Thrones. They're dropping things in way early and everything is really paying off. I mean, the way they set things up, and, like, halfway through the season, I'm thinking, okay, why is Saul and Will Downing even in this? There's long sequences of them sitting on the beach and all that. And of course, the slicing of the diamond in the first episode, and, like, and it's not really mentioned again for a while. And I love how the things that they set up early are paying off. So I pay even more attention now because I'm like, okay, a lot of the stuff they're going to put in here is going to pay off later. So there's another awesome touch I love in this show.
Andy, that is very good advice because you're absolutely right. And as I'm watching it and knowing what is happening. It took me a second to recognize that they were even doing it because I was waiting to hear these things. Does that make sense to you? Like they would mention, like you see the microfibers and immediately I know what's going to happen. Right.
Of course.
So the way they kind of built that up was very interesting in the way they tied it in. Before we go back to the beginning, because that's where I probably should have started, I do want to say I love the guy. His name is Jovan Adepo, who plays Saul. He was Bass Reeves in Watchmen, if you remember.
Oh, that's where I recognize. I couldn't place where he was from.
He is great. I love him. And as a kind of a bigger dude, I appreciate the fact that he's like a big, he's a pretty big dude. He's not like, you know, like when you see his body, you're like, wow, he's really stocky. He's like a big guy, but he's kind of playing almost a leading man. And it kind of made me feel good. It's like, okay, big.
Hey, made me feel great. Yeah,
big wide dudes unite, right?
Yeah. There you go. Hey, stocky.
Exactly.
Well, real quick, I want to say real quick, Ando. Because Gina was mentioning, you know, when Wade talks about how he was going to freeze himself and wake up time to time, I was like, I thought I saw that. What? And I'm like, oh, it's, you remember that show Wayward Pines?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
The second season, there's a character that does that as they're setting up a new civilization. So it's pretty interesting. But he wakes up every so many years to check in on everything.
Well, that is, so, anyway, I mean, that's also kind of a plot point of the kind of mythology of Alien and Aliens, right? That Ripley is in cryo-freeze.
Cryogenic freeze. Yeah.
That's a sci-fi thing. But let's go back. I should have started at the beginning. And
Hold on, before we get off, well, I got one more question about Saul.
Yes.
And Axel, you're not going to be able to answer this, I don't think. But Solo and Gina, what do you guys think? Why, what's the Secretary General, CCH Pounder, I can't remember what her, Secretary General is talking to Saul at the end, and she says no one knows the real reason Saul was chosen. What the hell does that mean? Do you guys have any idea? Why wouldn't she know why he was picked? How the hell did they figure that out then? They let the CNT pick? What? That line doesn't make any sense to me at all.
Gina, go, and I have an opinion on that.
I have a theory because, I'm looking at my cast list. Dr. Yi said to him, "My daughter always said you were the smartest one." I actually think in some weird way she has picked him. Or they heard her say that to him. You know, because they're listening. Everyone's listening. The aliens and the humans. Or they heard her say that to him, and so they selected him.
Oh, I like that idea.
My theory.
Mine's a little outside the box, because when Gina in her intro mentioned, and this is something we'll talk about whenever Axel's ready, about how did this technology that came from the future, how is it here now? I'm thinking 400 years, I'm thinking they're already there, or someone's already there. But I think that there is, with every existence, whether it's aliens, humans, there's always someone who goes against the norm. I have a feeling there is a Santi that's working with the humans to help them.
Well, even that
navigate
first,
in a way.
Even the first contact, when Dr. Yi is talking and he's like, "I'm a pacifist, don't call again." I mean, so there's obviously people that don't want them to come and do this within their own ranks. So yeah, that's a good idea too.
Yeah, to me that I was thinking, you know, so I mean, who knows? But again, this is something we could have formulated more if we were doing this week to week.
Yeah, for sure. You know? For sure.
Because I'm sure we'd all have crazy things and then be wrong and then change it the next week.
Well,
are you saying, Heath, that you think Saul's in on it?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, not at all. He has no clue.
But
no,
maybe an inside man on the Santee side that fed them the information that says maybe you should put Saul in here.
Whoever's above Saul, above CCH Pounder, whoever's calling it, maybe there's some people we haven't met yet that are kind of trickling down what to do. I think there could be some secret higher ups that are working with Asante.
Yeah,
that's. I mean, that would make sense to me.
I can't really theorize on this.
it's killing you, isn't but, it?
Well, yeah, I can't really, because there's another interesting point, which I'll just interject a little bit of book to TV difference and give a nod to Dan and Dave, which is that the stuff in the beginning, which I want to get to, and the do not answer message and all that, because we need to talk about that. But these characters, these five friends, are not in the book. The book is all Chinese people, first of all. We have to remember that. Much like when most Americans write a book and all the characters write in our movies, there's Americans. This is a Chinese book. So in the book, China is at the forefront of everything that's happening. And all of the characters are mostly Chinese. So that's the first part. The second part is they basically went through the three novels and picked out kind of the main characters of different parts of the novels and put them together as these five people.
Oh, wow. So they're a compilation characters, yeah, really, so, more than anything.
Yeah. So there's a lot of articles out there saying that they took that there's actually one character in the book that they then split into five in the show. That's not really what happens. That's kind of true for a portion of the first three or four episodes, because that's really the first book. But once they start moving forward, I started to realize, it was pretty early on, and it was with Saul. I was like, oh, Saul is the guy from the second book. So they took what happened to another character and they transposed it onto a completely different character with a kind of a similar personality, but kind of different too. And they did they did that with, then by the end of the season, I realized, oh, they did that with all of the characters except for the John Bradley character, who seems to be invented just for the just to have him on the show. That's okay though too, because he was fun, right? While he lasted, why when he got taken out, I was not at all surprised, because by that time I was like, wait a second, I don't think he's any of these characters. And then he ends up dead. So that's
the surprise. See, I thought he wasn't dead. I thought it was like it really didn't happen and he'd be back. And I'm like, oh, I'm wrong.
Well, Solo, he might be. I don't know. It's because that, you know what I'm saying? Like they could then pull a different character, because there's still a lot of other characters that they've not introduced that they could have if they wanted to earlier on, right? So I have to give them credit for that. They did kind of, that was one of my questions about this, was how the fuck are they going to do this? Because there's no way you could be invested. There's only really one character that is in all three books.
Interesting.
That's interesting.
So I think I could tell you who that character is without spoiling anything, because I've already kind of explained to you.
Before you do that, can we guess?
Yes, you guessed. Right. Good. Right. I like that. Okay.
Okay. I'm going to say,
go ahead. Go ahead, Solo.
I'm going to say Jin is in. That's my guess.
That is incorrect.
Oh,
I'm going to guess it's Wade.
That is incorrect.
Oh, Gina, you're our only hope.
Oh my gosh. I'm still like really bad with the names. I'm not seeing Wade on here.
Hold on. Is it one human that's in all three books?
Aha.
So far doesn't count, right?
Thomas Wade.
Andy got it. No,
okay.
Andy spoiled it.
Andy spoiled it. That would make Gina answer. Great job, Andy. Appreciate it.
Sorry.
Thank you for playing.
The character of Sofon, or the idea, like, I don't know if you can really call it a character, is present in all three books. And I might be wrong, because weird things happen in the books, and someone might be like, "Oh, you forgot this," but I can stand corrected. I'm not an expert, but that explains the way the books are told, that it should make you more interested. Like, oh, that's kind of weird, right? Like, these none of the characters are with each other. Why is that? There's different reasons for that, right? There's only two, time and space, right? So there's different reasons, but they do a great job of bringing them all together like that.
What's so fun too, if one survives, they all survive. So that would kind of leave one to think there's some type of generational memory carried on by even if there was one person. So Sofon could even exist through countless generations if they're kind of more like a less like an individual. I mean, you know, maybe they're more like a like an aspen tree system. Do you know what I mean? Like all interconnected. Mm. They can communicate without, they know what each other's thinking. So it's like a hive mind.
Yeah. It's very Borg. I had a lot of Borg thoughts series.
And it's AI. It's an AI, right? So that they kind of go over that very quickly in the show, where they look up in the sky, like Sofon, the woman who's playing the character Sofon, who keeps cutting off everyone's heads. Like, as soon as she appeared, I was like, that's Sofon. And then it wasn't until way later that I was like, oh my God, I was right. That was, I like the way they did introduce the character like that. But
you're not invited.
Yeah, that was cool.
When she
explains to them after they open the file and they look up in the sky and they say, we unfolded a proton and did all that. And you see them writing, like scanning stuff onto it. Mm-hmm. What it is it becomes a computer. So it's an AI. So it becomes, and I think this, I think that it, this is already showing it, that it's kind of a character in itself, but the way you described it, Gina, is very spot on. It's almost like they created a new kind of thing, right? Like they inadvertently created a new form of life.
Okay. So I have two questions. The first one is for Axel and the second one is for Gina and Solo. So Axel, in the book, do we see a human manifestation of the Sofon?
That's hard to, I'm not going to answer that question.
Okay. Okay. And then for Gina and Solo, they said multiple times there's two Sofons. Are we going to see another different manifestation? Could someone else be a Sofon? Have we only seen one of them and the other one we're going to see at some other time? This was just something that came to me. It might be a crazy idea, but maybe one of the, maybe the other Sofon.
I don't know if I'm ready to answer. I'm not ready to answer that yet because it was so much we had to talk.
Yeah,
it's a great thought, Ando. And before we ask Axel so many questions of what's in, what's not.
Yeah,
I think we should just discuss what we did.
That's a good idea. That's probably a good idea.
and then leave it for another pod because then before the season or whatever, we could get back together.
Yeah.
And if we, you know, depending on who read the books, who did, you know, we could do something. But I don't want to go. So I know where your head's at, and believe me,
yeah, I know.
I am with you. But there's so much we need to talk about.
I've got a couple ideas too, but we can put a pin in it, as they like to say.
And even me, Andy brings up a good point. So there's four, right? Two are on Trisolaris, and two are on Earth, and they can have that instantaneous communication between each other, which I thought that when that's explained, that's just like, as a sci-fi nerd, I really tell people, listen, read these books, because they're so fun like that. It's just, this dude just nerds out on this shit. Like, this is not just like, they explained that so quickly. And the way it's explained in the book, the unfolding of the proton, is so fun and weird and interesting that I've literally listened to it like 50 times. Like there's part, like I listen to it before I go to sleep. It's soothing. And the way the guy in the book does the voice of the Trisolarans is very interesting. It's very fun.
It's different than the guy who read the Game of Thrones books at the beginning.
Yeah.
Doing all the voices.
There's two guys. There's a different guy that does the next two books. And the one thing, too, about listening to it is the voice of when he does the voice of the cop, our friend from Doctor Strange. What's Clarence. His name?
Benedict Wong, baby.
Yes.
My favorite character.
Yep. Yeah, that's awesome.
The voice is really that's actually the closest character to the book and the TV show is Da Shi. That's like, even in the book, he's like, "Hey, what are you doing?" That's like, I'm actually doing the voice. I was like, "Wow, that's pretty good." Hey, I was like, job, "What's happening with the aliens? Tell me now." And he smokes another cigarette.
I have a request. Again, I don't mean. You know, again, and if this is not what we want to do, I feel like we should talk more about what we watched.
All right, let's go back.
I mean, we went
into Solo. Yeah. We start in 1966 cool China. We start with the Cultural Revolution. Solo. What were your? How did you feel about the going right into it with that stuff? Learning about Dr. Yi, Red Coast Station, all that kind of stuff. Give us your breakdown of it.
I was super hooked. I didn't expect to get thrown in that quick, get that emotional, but her acting performance, the young Dr. Yi, I was just like, oh my God, I felt for her.
Great.
I know in the books that there's probably, like you said, there's more where you learn, and I'm eager to go back and listen because I want it. But the way, I mean, you knew what was happening. I mean, it was so fast, but yet you knew. And then when they bring his wife out, and I'm like, oh my God, I'm thinking, what would I do if that was, you know, like, but it was just so powerful. And I was so into the flashbacks of how, like, when she's in prison and what, you know, everything going on till she makes contact. I you know, of course, I love the stuff in the present. This show just got me so. I'm surprised something like this is what hooked me early, but it was done so damn well, and it just I was in right away. Like, honestly, like 3-4 minutes in, I'm like, I'm gonna love this show. I already know it, and it was just, I couldn't believe they went that route that early. But wow, it got me.
I think there's a reason for it because I understand what you're saying, but. What is this scene? What is that opening scene remind you?
I was going to say it's Arya and her dad.
Yes. Oh, completely. 100%.
Oh, yeah.
Different
Thank
universe.
You, 100%.
Of
Thank
Arya's.
You.
I was just like, oh my gosh. And it's so familiar.
They were replaying one of their greatest hits.
You're just like, oh yeah. Okay. This is, you know, this is how it's going to go. Like, we're starting with something that feels familiar, but it's in a very different universe, world, country.
I didn't even think of that, Gene. Oh my God. That's probably why I was
Of course. Yeah.
Oh my God.
They replayed one of their greatest hits right out of the gate. Holy, it was perfect.
Shit. You're right.
Yeah. That was great. And you're right. Solo, the actress, her name is Xin Zhang, as the young Yi. She was really fantastic. And that stuff,
man.
I loved the flashback stuff. I actually wish there was more, but I think they did a good job.
Yeah, I was kind of bummed out when they were done with it. I'll admit, I was a little bummed.
Yeah. But she was fantastic. And it made it believable, too, because you see that successively every time there is a light of hope for her, right? She is either used, abused, or someone betrays her, right? Every single time.
Yeah.
She can't.
Yeah, whether it was the guy taking the guy taking her idea, or her getting shipped off, or her it was,
and then
there's three or four different ones.
They kill her father. They get her mother to participate, basically, in the murder, the public execution of her father, simply because he's a scientist and wants to uphold scientific principles. But then they save her life and use her only because she is a scientist.
Mm-hmm.
So that is infuriating, right? Like, could you imagine if someone did that to you? like someone murdered one of your parents, like Solo, because your dad was a great actor. And then they were like, now you must act for us on state media. You know what I'm saying? Right? Like, you star in the sitcom, Solo. Yeah, yeah. So that's, I think they
the Chinese Friends. Yeah.
Yeah. No, so totally. Did you all feel that too? Like at her, while that was building up, did you see where it was going to? Did you make a connection to what was happening in the world and the flashbacks?
I didn't see it until it was almost revealed that she sent the, like, as soon as she presses the send button, I mean, then obviously I knew, but before that I wasn't really, I was thinking she was going to be a maybe not a hero character, but a good character. I mean, the actress that plays the adult Dr. Yi, I only know her from Star Trek, and on there she's the nicest person in the world. So I wasn't even thinking that she was going to turn out to be this person that brings these people here. I was really surprised with that turn, honestly.
Anyone? Bueller?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't think she thinks she's the bad guy, you know?
I think eventually she does, but not till the end, close to the end. But, or maybe she doesn't think she's the bad guy, but she has some regrets.
I guess what's unclear is, does she know at the level of which, I'm going to say the High Sparrow was communicating with the Santi.
Yeah.
Shame. You
know, does she know he was that involved? Because, I mean, we talked about how everyone kind of like screws her over. And I mean, you know, a lot of them were men. And I just kind of think, oh God, another man to fuck up my plan of alien helping us. Yeah. Like, you know, although I don't think, you know, the whole Little Red Riding Hood story, Little Red Riding Hood story. It, like, he's saying it, and I was just like, oh, this is going to go really bad, like, one way or another. They're the wolf, and he doesn't even know it. And even though they're like, oh, we don't associate with liars, it's like, dude, you guys been watching these guys for long enough to know that they're all liars. Like, said from the very beginning, if we show up, we will conquer your civilization. Mm-hmm. You know, there is. So, I mean, she didn't kind of care, because I guess she thought, you know, maybe the human race is, you know, meant to burn, but
deserves it.
You know, yeah. I don't know if she ever really, I mean,
I got the impression that she did after Clarence came in with the tape recorder, and or not Clarence, one, I can't remember which one of them did. One of them came in with the tape recorder and said, these are the greatest hits. And then she listens to that, the story of him telling him about the lying and the, we fear you. And then all that, that's when I got the impression that she felt she made a mistake.
But not when they said, if we show up, we will conquer your civilization. I mean, I guess she's like, I'll be dead, so I won't see it. So we'll see what happens. I mean, but,
like, even before that, though, she kept saying, whatever happens is the Lord's will. And this is all. And then as soon as then, I don't know. That was just the way I read it. I could be wrong. I don't know.
Well, I think it's time goes by as well, right? So you convince yourself of certain things, and Mike Evans enters the picture, you know? So, but to go back to the actual message and lead up to that, how did that strike you, Solo? Were you, when that happened, did you then connect what was going on in the present timeline in the show?
Yeah.
Or were you getting it before?
You know, I honestly don't know, but I kind of felt that way, and then that confirmed it. So maybe a little bit.
Yeah.
But I was just like, you know, I was thinking when she did that, like, what would you guys do? Would you send the message?
I mean, that's the question.
I mean, I probably would send the message, probably regret it a few years later after they put me in the prison and put water all over me and I'm freezing. If I was at that point, I'm probably like, yeah, maybe I don't know. Oh, was that before? Oh, that was before. Never mind. Anyway,
I would have taken my coffee or my whiskey or whatever I was drinking at the time and pour it all over the computer and fry that son of a bitch and not answer. That would be my
yeah, Kurt Russell.
Yes,
You know, Catfish said it depends if Trump wins the election.
You know what?
Yeah. I was thinking the same thing. I was like, you know what? If this was 26, I don't,
they was, can't show up soon enough.
Yeah, it was. It's tough. I think that both the show and the novel do an amazing job of showing you why she answered and why and what her answer is basically like we've run out of. We don't have the ability to govern ourselves anymore or to take care of this planet any longer. And
we cannot save ourselves. Yeah, we can't.
And the Silent Spring book, the thing with Mike Evans, I think that's all very interesting stuff building up how she conflated the climate crisis and her government with her personal life and everything. And was just like, it can't be any worse than this. And it's because she believed in science so much too. She was like, if this, you know, civilization has the ability to contact us and answer us, then they must be greater than us. And I think they communicate. That's the feeling I got. And this is from watching the TV show that, and so I don't know if she ever ends up regretting it. Maybe just regretting that she's not being celebrated any longer because there's
that could be too.
Yeah,
you know.
Well, you got to look at it too, and we are. But every individual is different in what they've gone through, whether or not they would press that button. Think about what she's been through. You know, it could be a time. What if it was the late '80s and everything's cool and be like, no, I love the way things are going. I'm not going to send it. But it, you know, because it's that time. And if we're in 2024, well, I don't know.
It depends on who you are and where you're Don Johnson
and what you've gone through. I'm just saying. Like if it was 1994, Goonies
never died.
I ain't pressing the button. I love the night.
Yeah. No. But now 2020. You're right, Solo. You know, yeah, but that's why
2020. Yeah.
They did such a good job of putting that all together, right? And it was they layer it. It's her personal life, her country, her history, and then also the environment. And she's also witnessing this deforestation that's happening as well, right? So it's a direct reminder. And I love the Silent Spring thing to me was really interesting. When that's introduced, I was like, I like that. And Mike Evans is kind of cool too.
Every time you say Mike Evans, I'm thinking of the Tampa Bay wide receiver. And I just
that's how I remember his name, Solo. I just, of course, the name is, I'm like, it's Tampa Bay wide receiver. Yeah.
Too, like, you're going to bring Johnny Manziel.
So the other things that we are introduced to in the first couple of episodes and the concepts that I was looking forward to seeing is the countdown and the headset / VR world. What did you all think of the countdown? And did you think, I think that the countdown in particular is something that in the show for me, I don't know whether they fully explored it, right? Like Augie has the countdown. You hear all these scientists are dying like this. They try to build up like that kind of murder mystery. Like, why are the scientists dying? Did you feel that you were it was effectively explained to you while they were dying? Were they committing suicide? Were they being killed? Were they playing the game and then losing? Do you know what I'm saying? Like, how did that come across to you, the whole countdown into the video game thing?
That was one of the moments, the countdown stuff was one of the moments where I realized, when I said earlier how propulsive this was and how the slow burn wasn't, I mean, there's still some slow burns here, but not nearly what I was expecting. When that basically, the countdown thing was basically solved by an end of episode 2, I think, that it basically disappears and we don't have to hear from it again, or episode 3, when they give up, or maybe it's episode 4, but it's early on. And I figured that was going to be like a count. We'd see what happened at the end of the countdown by the end of the season. I thought that would be a season finale thing. I thought it was very cool. I liked it. I don't know if it was fully explained, but I guess it doesn't bother me because we moved on to the next thing. And I mean, it is a little weird that we don't know exactly if the scientists were actually killing themselves or they were being killed, or I don't know. It doesn't bother me, I guess, the way it was.
It might just be murders to look like suicides in some cases. And also, yes, we don't know if they were actively playing the game or not. And I think that's because Dr. Ye kind of said, oh, my daughter was playing this game before she killed herself, which isn't true. We know that now. But it's we know people who were playing the game were found dead, and that's likely because they all I can think is did not have the compassion to save the people, which seems to be one of the big reasons that Jin was moved along and she was like the highest scoring on that scale.
Great point.
Whereas, you know, some people earlier on would have been like, you know, just continue to save the world before the people. And I think as soon as or their own world before the Santi people. And I think, you know, that's like a red flag to get the Tatiana treatment or whoever else.
I mean, that was definitely why she advanced, I think, because even the Sofan says when she reaches the end of level 3, I think, the object of the game is to save the people, not to figure out the three-body problem. I kind of have a feeling that's basically what the whole show is going to be about, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, and they said she had like the highest scores, I want to say, of compassion or something like that when they were talking about her of anyone that's played the game. So I think that's very interesting.
So explain to me. So by Jin succeeding and getting to that next level and then they have the meeting and then, you know, the Maester. Jack. When you know Jack doesn't want to be a part of it, were they trying? You know, I can't really remember, or maybe I missed it. Were they trying to recruit her for their end, right? And then she goes the opposite way.
Yes,
I'm drawing a blank. Yep,
Yeah, there's a point where it's stated that the headsets are a recruiting tool.
Okay. Yes. Okay. Okay. I just wanted to make sure. Were they making attempts on her life? I can't remember.
On Jin?
I don't think so.
I think it's just Saul. Because I'm wondering, because see, this is where it all turns for me is, I mean, I'm sure there's a reason there you guys will tell me, but where I was kind of getting, not confused, but trying to wrap my head around what the Santi were thinking, where you have these followers on this ship, and then, of course, after the story and the whole thing, the Lord stops talking to Jonathan Pryce or to Mike Evans, and then all of a sudden, you know, they kill everyone on that I mean, kids and everything. And when I saw that piece of the leg, it broke my heart. I'm like, why do you have to kill everyone? And that's where it got to me. Man, the Santi can manipulate anyone, it seems, to do whatever they want, but now they're not protected, so it allowed it to happen. So I was just like, all these things. Now I understand why Augie after that is just like has lost it, because her technology that she developed was used, you know, kind of reminded me, remember Ghost Ship? Do you guys ever see that first scene?
Yeah, Solo.
That's what it reminded me. I'm like, where's Juliana Margulies?
Ghost Ship.
But I'm just like, that's why, like, killing your own, you know, I know maybe you're against what they believe in because they're with the Santi, but, like, it just seemed like, was it necessary to do, I'm just saying these are, like, the things that were going through my head, and I think this is where the acceleration of this story kind of in binging got me kind of all, whoa, I need a break because I need to digest this.
Yeah, I agree with you, Solo. I try to erase my knowledge, and now looking at what the show showed me, I feel like I don't know that it was ever fully explored, these ideas, whether it is the countdown, the VR, the microfibers and why they kill all those people like you're talking about, Solo, right? Which then causes a rift in a relationship. We see the result of it. But particularly for me, it's the idea of why the scientists were being given the VR headsets, like you said, a recruiting thing. Were they was the show trying to say that at some point the Santee were actually trying to see if the scientists could solve the three-body problem? Like, could the Earth scientists help them first? Like, before we're doing this to kill you all and the Sofons are at CERN and they're fucking up science and human science cannot advance, right? Like, that's the point. The point of the Sofons is to stop science. And we have them murdering all these scientists, but also playing this game with them. Are they trying to get them to help them first before we get farther in the future? And you see that with Mike Evans and they cut off contact. But that's the thing that I don't think is fully explored. And it's almost like they could have, there's a lot more to cover. But
there's got
to
be more than that in play, because it doesn't make sense that they would. I get the disrupting science so the humans can't advance past them technological, but why don't they just kill the scientists then? Why are they messing with them? That's an interesting question. I hadn't thought about it much.
Yeah. But. See, that's the thing is, did you get the impression, because I was trying to see in this show, are they trying to communicate to us? They want to see if they can actually help, because remember, that when Sofon is talking to them after they open the file, she says, it took you this long to advance. It took you like 10,000 years for your society to advance to nuclear age. Then the computer age. Advanced.
I love much that. That conversation was very cool.
Yes. And then she says, we don't, because we keep on having cataclysmic events because of the three body system we live in that we have to dehydrate.
They keep getting reset. Their culture gets reset so many years.
That's what you're seeing in the background. You're seeing their cultures. One just gets to be medieval, and then one, they have these huge glass cities, but then it gets destroyed, right? They have chaotic and stable eras.
That whole concept was so cool.
So that's why I was wondering. I thought that they could have explored that more. They could have had, before they start killing people, they could have said, hey, you are going to be more advanced than us. By the time we get there in 400 years, you'll be past us at the rate you're going. So,
yeah, because that was amazing. And Ando, I know you were chomping at the bit because it was so cool. It's like, it took you 10,000 years to do this. And then it took you 50 and then 10. And then it's just amazing how society with technology and everything, how long it took us to get to a certain point, and then how it's accelerated like crazy once technology becomes prevalent. And then all of a sudden it's like, yeah, wow, look how much has changed in the last 20 years.
That's our lives, Solo.
I mean, right? It's crazy. Yeah. And it just, but when they threw it out there, I started, you know, again, this show is making me think like about everything. I'm like, oh my God, when you put it that way.
That's a cool concept. Oh. I'm glad that they see, that's the thing is, I think they could have stayed in that concept a little bit longer, but that's okay, because I think things will come back around. So the experience that you had, Solo, where it becomes a little bit confusing, like what are the aliens' motives? What are the people's motives? What are the different factions of people, right? Is a little bit confusing. I'll say it is also confusing in the book, but I think that they kind of play it to their advantage by then later. It's almost like they don't get to the characters until they're sitting around at the beach house, right? Then we really get to deeply know these characters, and we understand Will's love and like all this different kind of stuff. So I think that it's fast, the amount of that, but it serves a purpose.
Like I was saying before, I love that. And I actually I think the amount that they did was just enough, because it was enough to kind of get us thinking about it and talking about it, but it doesn't overpower the rest of the story of this season. And I think if you would have sat in that for another 10 minutes, it would have become too much like The Architect and Matrix Reloaded, where it goes on for way too long. And then that's all you're taking from that movie is that little clip. I liked how it was just a little, just kind of a taste. I think we will come back to that at some point. It's too cool of an idea not to.
Yep. What's next, yeah, Solo? What else did you want to talk about?
What's next, Solo?
Yeah.
I want to hear from Gina.
Yeah.
Gina, go to Gina.
In terms of what I'm thinking about?
Yeah, just everything. Well, we need some Gina on this pod.
I am thinking about...
Wait, my ride's almost here. Oh. The sirens, the classic sirens during a podcast. Oh,
I don't hear them. The noise canceling.
Oh, okay. Hey, it's working.
So I wonder about Will's brain floating through space a lot. And if, I mean, I feel like we'll see him again in another form. Like that human brain is too good for them to pass up and not take advantage of to use as a weapon or pawn or something. Like they have to be coming across that guy somewhere out in outer space.
I will be shocked if that doesn't happen at some, in some form.
Yeah. I agree. So I think about that a lot. What else have I really been thinking about? I mean, that's one of the big ones for sure. I do think a lot about like the next generation of this. I think, will time travel become part of this? I think that's something we need to consider.
I think it's a possibility too.
And I, you know, because how did those headsets get to Earth? Like, okay, Sofon's been present. Where did they build them? If Sofon built them, did they actually, well, I mean, even if they sent someone from the minute they heard from Dr. Ye in the 60s or whatever, they still wouldn't be there fast enough.
Robert Crane had that same question on the Facebook. Where did the...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. My feeling was that Sofon made them. But your idea that it could be something different or they could come from a future or past or whatever, I think that's kind of an interesting idea. But
yeah,
well, it would be possible that Sofon made them.
When you brought up Will's brain, too, the thing that I was thinking about, too, is that when we first meet him and he's teaching in his classroom, he's teaching about the multiverse.
Yeah,
they wouldn't have put that in there if something, I mean, so is there a multidimensional thing? Is he going to come back in some, I mean, is he the one sending them from some other dimension? We could go into crazy town.
Yeah. Here. Well, and didn't they want Jin to be brought in because she has familiarity?
Yeah. Understanding of different dimensions.
Dimensional thing look like. So, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that's way down the rabbit hole. Point. I don't even know where to start on that.
Yeah. Right. Well, let's bring in Benedict Wong.
Hell yeah. Let's do that.
So good. He was so good in this.
Dude, his little subtleties, it just I mean, I've always liked him, but in this, it was just like he freaking stole the show for me. Yeah. He was just so freaking good. I mean, even the stuff with his son and down, you know, and when he's, you know, playing the game later. And I mean, he just like to the interrogation and the fact that he's never once doubting what's happening. That's what found me more surprised. He wasn't the cynical former cop or whatever. He's all in and he gets it. And he's always, he's never really, he's just doing his job, of course, but he Davos is, you know, he's working for Davos. And I was like, Davos, you missing up some fingers?
Stannis Baratheon.
He gets a full hand.
Oh, man.
Imagine if Bravos.
They're like, who chose Saul? And then all of a sudden, Stannis steps out.
or who's the other one that like made a big, strong, I think it was a second season appearance, Tywin Lannister. Like, who are the big baddies?
Oh, yeah.
That I was on the privy, and I decided to join you.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's like, you know, he was carving up that stag, which was like such an amazing intro for a character, intro scene for a character.
It still gets me.
Yeah. But yeah, no, Benedict Wong, that, man, I just,
you know, who
that's what the
who he really, really reminded me of in this is Mike Ehrmantraut.
Oh, good one. Very good. Yeah,
that's a good. Very that's good. Very good.
Because he's obviously an ex-cop kind of guy. He whatever his boss says, he's like, okay, I'm going to do it. Yep. He's wiser than he appears. He's kind of a smart ass. He's definitely seen some shit. I mean, it's just I thought Benedict Wild. I also he was awesome in this.
He's kind of a fuck up too. Like he's worked for like every agency.
Bad relationship with his family. I mean, the whole thing is there. It's
I can relate to his character so well.
Well, he's.
But yeah, no, it just it in all this craziness with, you know, the scientists and everything, to have that kind of normal person or whatever. In the
Well, he grounds the story to us. Yeah.
Yeah, he really does. And it gives you that balance. But I will say, as much as sometimes Jin and Saw, I was getting a little irritated with at times. But all in all, I really enjoyed the group. You know, the friends and everything. It really did. It was well done. And it just grabbed me in, aside from everything else and the overall story and everything. But again, for me, I have to love the characters, or at least 75% of them, to love a show. And I was in right away. And but, you know, I will say, Gina, I know the actress who plays Jin, you were kind of like, I don't know. She doesn't seem as... her resume as an actress doesn't seem as big as the other ones, but I don't know. There's points where, you know, cause talking about the charisma and everything, I'm wondering if they went with her because they didn't want someone. So maybe that's what, I don't know if that's what they were looking for, to not have everyone have all these personalities. So it worked for me in the group. There were times where I was kind of like, okay, but then there was times where I was like, oh, she's doing a good job, better than I thought. You know, I was going back and forth with her as well.
Mm-hmm. I was too. Yeah, I thought she was fine, but she wasn't perfect.
A casting switch that would have been interesting is switching the actress that played the young Dr. Yi with her. That would have been interesting. Oh,
yes, that would have been interesting. Yeah. That's I kind of like her. I liked her. There's two people in the show that I wasn't so sure of the casting. The first is Will. I don't know, maybe it's just he just was like very depressed and sick the whole time, and he just didn't really, I just wasn't buying into his shit show. You know, the guy is just, it just, I don't know, it didn't, am I heartless here? That is everyone else like really love Will?
I enjoyed him. I thought he was good.
I actually found him to be comfortingly familiar. Like I was like, where have I seen this guy before?
What British show have we seen it?
Well, and then I looked him up and I hadn't seen him in anything, but he's so familiar, and he's, I guess, a phenomenal stage actor because he like won a Tony when he was young.
Yeah, yeah. I've seen it. I just, I don't know. He wasn't, I didn't find him to be great.
I found him very familiar. And I enjoyed that. And I was like, oh, I have stage 4 pancreatic cancer. I was like, motherfucker. I was like, no. So I kind of dug him. I do think what Samuel Tarly said to him was about, you know, him thinking Jin was out of his league. I was like, she's not out of Will's league, but she... But her hot Indian boyfriend is out of her league. Like, what are we talking about here? Like, that's super perfect for each other.
I know. I was thinking the same thing. Yeah. I mean, I know they're trying to paint him as maybe the geek of all geeks, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was like, no, they would be great.
I didn't see that. I didn't get the whole love thing between them two. And then by the end of, like, in the last episode, when her boyfriend tries to talk to her and he's like, are we broken up now? And she's like, and he was like, did you always love him? And she's like, yes, I always loved him. And my wife turns to me and goes, oh, she loved that guy? That she loved Will? Like, it just didn't jive to me. And also that they would be that close and she would not know. How dumb would you have to, I mean, we all have friends who have had crushes on friends and they always know. If they don't, they're a moron.
If they want to know or want to admit that they know,
but they would at least have talked about it or so. I just felt that was not fully developed. I mean, I didn't hate it. It didn't ruin anything for me, but that relationship between those two just didn't, it just didn't jive.
Well, Axel, I thought the whole time until later that they dated and they broke up. That's why he's so, that's the impression I got.
It was
until later on. I'm like, wait, they never dated?
It wasn't really explained. It really wasn't explained well.
Yeah.
And I just, I do have to bring up, and I don't, I just felt that the character of Augie, she was an interesting character, but also, and I, maybe this is a weird thing to say, she's like too good looking for this show. Like, I just felt she was so stunning that every time she walked into a room, everyone would just be like, you are stunning.
And she was only good enough. She was only hot enough to be the bad girl in Speed 3, Axel, remember?
Well, she was actually in Fast and Furious. Speed 3?
No, that was a line from the movie.
I know.
From the show.
Oh, oh, I think that was a joke because that's the role she's played so far in her career.
Well, she was the one of the, she was in the From Dusk Till Dawn TV series. Yeah. And if you look at season one's cover art, it's her with the fangs.
Oh, okay.
And she's in Baby Driver.
Yeah, she's been
in Baby Driver. John Hamm's girlfriend. Yeah. That's what I was thinking of. I don't Baby Driver.
I just felt it was a little, I don't know. It's just like, it just felt a little Hollywood to me. You know what I mean? Like, that's what it just felt like with other parts of the show, they weren't doing that. And I also felt that her character was not well developed. Is like, I guess she's in really in love with Saul, and then the way that she dealt with, they had her deal with shutting down the company, and then that guy's just like yelling at her in that room all the time, and she just keeps on going back to the thing. I don't know. I just, for me, that was one of the weakest parts. Was they didn't. I don't feel they really gave her much to do past that. But we'll see what happens. And then she just kind of disappeared, and all of a sudden she's like giving people wells, like filters.
Well, water, she's filters. Still traumatized at what her technology did. So she's, you know,
that part I accepted, and I thought that was done well, but then I felt she just kind of disappeared, but the show does move fast.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah, I thought she was just fine. I thought she was fine. I mean, her character might have been a little underdeveloped, I think. But I mean, I don't think that's her fault. And the stuff with Will Downing and Jen, I bought that. I liked it. I didn't have any problem with it at all. So.
Yeah, I know enough nerds that I think it's completely plausible that those two are like completely clueless to each other.
That's my thought too, Gina. Exactly my thought.
Oh, no, I don't know. Man,
like, I know people like this that
Ando. Yeah,
but I also feel
you.
Like I also felt like Saul would say something, or you know what I mean? Like, he's so, they just, they were very close and outgoing, and but I guess people do. It didn't kill it for me. I'll say that. Like, I understood that that's what they were trying to tell me, but I don't think that I really felt it.
I guess maybe it's just because in the past I've been in that situation where I was the Saul there, and I had an uber nerdy friend that had the Captain America shield and the Ghostbusters proton pack and all that stuff in his room, and was super smart, and he spent all this time with this girl, and everyone knew that
I hope
he was
not
in love
listening.
With her, but he unfortunately cannot be listening.
Oh,
but
I'm sorry.
But he never would ever tell. And like, it would be all like, hey man, tell her that you like her. Tell her. And he's like, no, I can't. If it's going to happen, well, it's going to happen. So that's why I bought it, just because something from my real world where I've kind of been around something like that. So for me, it worked completely.
But think about all these characters, right? Yeah. They you have some of the social side and what, but they're all sucked into their job or what they want to do. And so they may not all of them. I mean, at times, yes, I think that's why it was a little struggle with the characters, but also the development from the creator side, is because they're so consumed with what they're doing scientifically that it is a little awkward socially, but it's all, it wasn't all there. It wasn't like your normal, I don't know. So I feel that some cues would have been missed, or because they're so, I mean, especially when she's wrapped up in the countdown and everything. I mean, you mentioned like, Saul, you have a woman over or whatever. And then they don't, you know, she doesn't say anything. I don't know. You're right. It feels
kind of like you were saying, sometimes when guys or girls get so tied up in their work, that's their only focus. and socially they just don't have a lot of social skills in that regard. So I guess I mean, we don't have to keep talking about it.
No, I can buy it. I also know that the story is so wide ranging that what happens will inform us later on. Like as we continue through the seasons, looking back at this season,
character building,
I might say, hey, that was kind of quick, or hey, I really didn't like I wasn't a huge fan of what they gave Augie to do in this season. But by next season, I might say like, oh, okay, this is more interesting stuff.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
And I think the fact that we actually care and that we're talking about it is good.
That's true.
For later on, because it's so difficult. You're trying to make a cool ass story or explain something that everyone isn't like so confused about. And you got these characters, I mean, it's making a show, and you got these characters you're trying to develop, but at the same time, we all know it's so hard to make an amazing show without any flaws, but I just feel more confident that they are going, like, we're going to go back, watch season one and be like, oh my God. Oh my God. Well, I'm hoping
that would be the thought.
You raise good points, Axel, because it's what we perceive, and I may like something and think something works. You may not. I mean, that's why we do a podcast, to discuss it, but it's like, there's no right or wrong. I'm like, yeah, I wish they could have done more here, but yet maybe we wouldn't have gotten this plot line, so I guess, over time, it'll see. Maybe I'll probably change my mind by this time next year. Be like, you know what, Axel? I don't like that that thing. And then he'd be like, dude, it's great. I rewatched it. You know. I don't
know. True that. True that. All right. I don't know. We covered a lot of stuff. Is there anything else that we hadn't? Because we talked a lot about the later episodes in the beginning.
You know what? I got one thing I want to bring up, because I didn't know this part of like Solo, I didn't know. I mean, I knew a little bit more than you going in, but I didn't know hardly anything. New sci-fi and aliens were involved, and that was about it. I was completely shocked with all of the religious stuff in this, and the cult, religious cults.
Oh,
and the,
I'm all glad of you
the,
mentioned
the,
that.
My Lord, when that came up, I'm like, whoa, they're going here. This is interesting. And somebody on the Facebook page, let me scroll down and get the name.
Francine.
Yes. Asked about, why are they calling him the My Lord? And my thought on that is that they call him My Lord because at some point the Sophons put in their heads that they're My Lord, because they know they can manipulate the human race with religion, is my guess. And they kind of planted that as a thing to call them My Lords, because like then later on when the sniper, and he's like, I'm sorry to name for your head. I thought this was they are my superiors. I'm an army and the soldier of the, or I'm a soldier in the army of the Lord. I thought all that stuff was incredible. What did you guys think about all the religious stuff going on here?
Well, I just think, and paint me cynical or paint me realistic, I don't know. I think if you're the Santi and you can look at the human race all in one big picture, and you go back to 2020 when we were a divided country on wearing fucking masks, that throw in religion. It's so easy to manipulate, but divide people over a simple concept. You throw in religion and you got a whole smorgasbord of conflict. It's just, we get so, I don't want to go down the religious path, because I believe everyone's beliefs are their beliefs. And I have no problem with what someone believes and what gets them through this stressful world. But man, we always have to be against, we can't all agree on everything. It's always a fight. It's always this and that. And it's just like, this Santi's looking at probably the human race and be like, this is going to be fucking easy.
that's kind of my thought as well.
Oh, it's sad.
There
you have it.
I thought that
nothing to say.
Okay. Yeah, okay, yeah. I don't blame you.
I agree with you, Solo. Of course, I thought as far as the show goes, they could have done a little bit better job of fleshing this out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And just to throw in a little book thing at you. In the books, it is much more complicated, and it may get more complicated, and I'm sure it will, as more people, as we see how other people react to the fact that the aliens are coming. They're showing it to us on the TV. We only see this one group that Mike Evans and Dr. Yee started, right, on the boat, which is kind of like Scientology, too, which I thought was kind of cool. It's the Sea, oh, the Sea Orb, right?
So,
where's Philip Seymour Hoffman?
So I think that's something that we can reserve judgment for and see how maybe they develop that further. Because there would be different reactions to, you know what I mean? Like political factions would develop based upon whether you want the aliens to come or should we fight them or blah, blah. You know what I mean?
Oh, big time.
So
that's why I thought I was impressed that they brought that topic up because it can't be an easy topic to write about, much less put in a multi-million dollar show. I was like, whoa, they're putting this in here. I think the thing that I kept thinking of was, oh, I was going to say quick. I was thinking the thing with Mike Evans, it reminded me of like the Jim Jones Kool-Aid thing and all that cult thing. That's what I was thinking of the whole time. So anyways, cool. Yeah, go ahead. Because aliens are coming. Sorry, Axel, go ahead.
Oh, no. I was just saying that.
British are coming.
The Lord thing, the My Lord thing is that's why I hesitate to say it. They do bring it up earlier in the show, right? Because of the Cultural Revolution, right? And how they remember at one point when she meets the first guy that she meets that betrays her, they have a kind of a conversation about God, right? Or, oh, we're not supposed to talk about this, right? And the woman on the stage says her father, you know, what do you, this shows that you could even believe in God. And he's like, I can't accept it or deny it. There's no proof. So I think that plays into a larger question and whether or not they're going to really tackle that stuff as the show goes on, I'm not sure. I don't really think they did a great job of explaining that. It's just like all of a sudden people became a cult, right? Which when you look around in our world today, that's not that hard to understand. It seems like everybody's just dying to join a fucking cult. They watch someone on TikTok and all of a sudden they're like their follower. You know what I mean? Like this is the world we live in. Yeah. So I think it could have just been kind of a comment on that in general. That's why they're using it, but it is developed further in the book. And I think that they have an opportunity to develop it further, but I'm not sure if they're going to do
it. But even at the beginning there, when Dr. Yee's daughter dies or commits suicide or killed or whatever actually happens there, doesn't she say to one of her friends, do you believe in God?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
So I would think we're going to come back to some of that at some point.
Yeah. I think so. I definitely think so too. And I think that we'll learn more about, I would hope that we would learn more about, and the thing that struck me is how long was Mike Evans talking to them that it took them that long to be like, oh, you're reading a fucking book? You know what I'm saying? Like, why was he reading the book? Didn't he say to them, hey, I'm reading you a story? You know, and they didn't understand that he was lying or making it up, or they thought it was true. So I just felt that was a little chuggy, and maybe we'd just get a little bit more of an understanding of where the Santi mindset is at.
And
as far as
the whole thing about not understanding what a lie is, I thought was very strange too. How would you not understand that? Just I have a hard time wrapping my head around that concept of not understanding what that is.
But that too can be further explained.
Yeah,
and it will be. I'm sure it will be.
But they've clearly infiltrated. Like they know these things are not. They know what a lie is. They know what a story is. They've clearly infiltrated with Tatiana. They've been watching humans. Yeah. If they can hack into, what was it, all the whatever McCullough's, I can't remember what, you know, it's like all the.
Oh, like CERN, like the.
It wasn't servers, but it was, you know, these.
The big colliders?
I don't think it was colliders was. what it was, but, you know, reactors or something, if all of them around the world were, you know, all of a sudden acting strange because they hacked them, right, to kind of disrupt any findings that they had and made them think that, like, you know, decades of research are wrong. If they could do that, they should have been able to gather enough information to, you know what a lie is, know what a story is. And why did they wait till this, like, opportune time with, you know, the High Sparrow to all of a sudden start playing dumb? You know, there's just that. It doesn't make sense.
It's times like that where it seems like the Santee are just fucking with the people too.
Oh yeah.
That's totally. That's kind of what that leads me to believe.
Yeah. And initially, if why even get to know these people? If initially you said, if we come, we will conquer your civilization. You know, it's kind of like, if they were that straightforward, why? I don't know. Like, I just think there's some muddy waters with some of the logic here.
Yeah. And one of the things I had an issue with was destroying the ship and then be like, oh, we found the hard drive.
Right?
On the hard drive, yeah.
Why not send a SEAL team on there?
Oh, my God. Seriously.
That was a little too much for me.
We have to do it this way so Augie turns into a drunk.
Yeah. That was kind of
There is a, I think that throughout this season, they're making a calculation on that there is so much stuff ahead of them that they need to move quicker. I feel like it's, and I actually felt like this season was almost like a reverse Game of Thrones, where the first five episodes felt like a lot of spectacle and stuff happening. And then the three episodes, we got to know the characters in more in depth. It was a little bit more political. We kind of give you time to think about things a little bit more and sink into it. Idea based instead of plot based. And I don't think that's necessarily wrong, but I think if you do sit back and kind of pick it apart as a TV show, a lot of there's a lot of like loose threads and thin motivations, especially the boat too. I was thinking the same thing, Solo. It's like, okay, so you need to get a small thing that's about like 2 inches by 4 inches big. So let's destroy a whole boat. Like they were.
I think some of that too was about. I guess part of the way I took that is Raj at one point says to, I think he's when he's arguing with Jin, he's like, "We're at war." So part of that to me was thinking they're the main goal is to get the hard drive, but it's also to take out their enemies. That was kind of where I took that from, is that was where Wade and Raj are coming
from. It's like why we drop the bomb, to scare the Russians,
mm-hmm.
not to kill, right? Not to stop World War II. It was to scare the Russians and show them that we rule the world now. So I buy that. But again, that could have been, I think, explained a little bit better.
Oh yeah, for sure.
All right. Anything else?
I just have one quick thing. Sorry. I just want to say, cause I don't think we really talk about, but how they're able to scrub a human from the human eye and not see it.
Oh,
that was cool.
I mean, that scene where, Sam Tarly gets murdered and then Benedict Wong is out there keeping an eye on him and can't see what's going on. That's another scream at the TV moment.
Yeah, through the glass. Yeah. You don't see anything.
Go up there! Go up there!
Yeah.
You know, that was well done. That was fun.
That was pretty remarkable. So I just wanted to make sure I mentioned that, because that's something I'm definitely going to go back and watch. And I mean, down to even when Augie's at the stairs, gets the cigarette, you're like, wait a minute, is she nuts? Does she only see her? And then you're like, okay, maybe they scrubbed the video. But then it's like, wait a minute, he can't see it in real time. Oh my God. You know?
Yeah.
So
that was one of the, go ahead,
Gina. I was going to say that kind of ties to how none of the satellites saw the universe blinking. Like, they're able to block certain electronics from seeing what's there.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Right.
And
because that's the thing is Jack saw his killer, but Benedict Wong didn't see it. Mm-hmm. From, you know, it's like that fascinates me more than I think a lot of things.
I don't think Benedict Wong saw Jack in that.
When I rewatched it,
you can see. I was watching that scene closely because I had these same questions.
No one in that room.
It's all plate glass. It's a plate glass room, and he doesn't see anything. Doesn't see Jack. Doesn't see anything. There's a big part of it, and she throws Jack up against the wall and the glass spider webs. He doesn't even see the glass spider web on the outside. So
Jesus.
There was a question on Facebook too from James that said, does Tatiana have any special abilities? She has killed some very big people rather quickly.
Well, I think that's where it gets into are the other Sofans that.
Yeah, you know. Is the other one somebody his question is kind of what triggered me to ask that question.
Well, and they deliver her the head stuff.
Yeah,
at the end, which is.
Yeah, what's the next step?
You're accepting. Yeah, what's the next step?
Interesting.
She's going to be reprogrammed. Can it reverse program? Because it sucked all the cerebral stuff out of people to understand them when they put it on, the retinal scan and everything. Can it also download into people?
Interesting.
Oh, yeah. Jeez.
That is interesting. Axel, there's another comment here from our boy, Mr. Aaron Otto. I don't know if you saw his. He says, I love the story, especially the human drama with Will. It was heartbreaking, but very well done.
Yes, I know. I just talked. Actually, I was on the phone with Aaron before we started podcasting. And I was like, he was like, I love that part. And I was like, yeah, it wasn't my favorite. Sorry. I am glad that you all have enjoyed this show. It seems that people are enjoying it. I thought the very anti- I can never pronounce his word, climactic way that the show ended, where they're just kind of standing there. It's like, we have work to do. And then the camera pulls back.
Like the Avengers.
Yeah. It made me feel like, but it also made me feel like they're pretty confident that they're doing another season. Like I really don't have any doubts that we're going to get a season two. Whether we get a season three or four, I guess, you know, you never know in streaming these days. It's all about money. I don't know what the investors are going to be interested in, content or number of subscribers or whatever the hell they're interested in. But I think they did a good job. It's a lot of stuff is going to follow. It's crazy. It's fun. I hope people do actually read or listen to the books. And if you do, let's talk about it on the show. I hope I didn't spoil anything. It was a difficult podcast, though, because it's hard for me not to interject. So thank you, Solo. I thank you for guiding in the, like, let's talk about the show. I appreciate that because I do want to constantly make those.
Yeah, we should have got down some areas you would have been hard at time with, I'm that sure.
Was, yeah.
It
yeah,
was
part
tough.
Of the reason
it's
I
tough.
Didn't want you to. You would have been like, great, I'm on 2 hours and I can't say a freaking word.
Yeah,
it is. It's kind of tough, but they gave, as it progresses, I think I'll become more familiar with this story as well, you know, as people who watched Game of Thrones did too, right? And you remember things, but in general, they did a great job.
I'm torn because I do want to listen to the books, but at the same time, I don't want to know everything.
Yeah, that's where I am exactly at. So
it's so tough.
But it sounds like they've switched enough up with the show that there will still be some surprises.
Yeah, I'm sure.
They've actually, as they did, Gina, that's true. And the reverse as well. Whereas, you know, in Game of Thrones, we got to a point where people felt like they were spoiling the books, right? Mm-hmm. And not the other way around. And I feel like by including some of the stuff they included in those three episodes, 6, 7, and 8 is from the second and some of it is from the third book too.
Interesting.
So you'll get a little bit, you'll be a little bit spoiled on the books, but in a kind of a different way, they still remix it. So yeah, that's kind of cool. I mean,
they messed around enough with Game of Thrones too. They're like Sansa Stark, Meryn Ramsay Bolton. That was not in the books.
Lady Stoneheart.
Yeah.
Lady Stoneheart, you know, so I think it's, you know, it's always,
I thought Lady Stoneheart was going to show up in, this show. I'm like, oh, that's where they
yeah. In the VR game.
Yeah, the VR game. Right? I mean, Nina Gold is casting this show, so like you said, we may get more Game of Thrones.
Oh, I'm sure we'll get tons more.
And while I don't think we're gonna have anywhere near the level of nudity and sex and violence in this show as we did in Game of Thrones, I love the way they managed to squeeze in the nudity when they rehydrated everyone in the game.
I like that. I see some weenies and boobies. I'm all about it.
Oh my god! Weenies and problem. Weenies we have boobies. To have nudity.
My wife
in our
was
show.
Happy. She was like, "Look, you got to see some boobs." I was like, "There you go, honey. See, I'm happy."
That's a supportive wife you got there, Axel.
She knows what I like. But in general,
do you call her my lord?
Oh, Solo? We're not going to talk about that on the podcast.
All right.
Shame.
My lord or me lord?
Shame.
My lord.
In general, it sounds like everybody liked it. I hope everyone enjoyed listening to the pod. Go listen to Bubba and Catfish too. I might do a rewatch on this where I kind of watch it on my own again and try to pick some stuff up. And I do encourage you to go ahead and I think in this it is very different. So I would say even more so than Game of Thrones, because again, in like Game of Thrones, everyone's not Chinese. So I think that they invented so many characters that you would probably still enjoy the show just as much if you knew what was coming. And so I would say, I don't think you're going to totally spoil yourself.
I'm guessing the end destination is still the same, but just the route to get there is probably going to be different.
Well, you never know with Dan and Dave. That's well, you true. Can't say that because George well, still has.
They don't
written.
Have to make up the ending.
Yes, I suppose that is true.
If Khaleesi shows up in season 4, well,
we could still see that actress, though. You know what I mean?
That's,
like,
that's true.
I'm not
that's
ruling
true.
Anyone out. There are some people I'd love to see show up in this show. But they're not too busy making the Jon Snow show that I never think is going to get made.
Oh, I hope it does. But yeah, I mean,
well, I do too, but where is it already?
I think you did make a good, that's true. You did make a, and with everything that's happening at HBO, all these companies, you know, it's so in flux. But Andy, you made a great point about, what was I thinking about the adaptation? I can't remember what you said.
Oh, the
you
fact
said.
That they know the end route.
Oh,
they
yes.
Know the
thank you. See, Andy
they can actually
does know
pace
everything.
The show like they
Andy
want to.
Andy knows everything. Yes, that I think that does have make a big, huge difference. And I think that now in retrospect, we see George still hasn't written that fucking book. That what the fuck were they supposed to do? And then when we find out in an interview that HBO is asking them to like shoot a whole season for phones. Like, did you read that article too? Like the crazy shit that they were coming at them about the last season, and you'll see why they wanted to get out of there and try to finish it as quickly as they could. Cause I don't think they knew if they were going to be able to finish it at all because of the way HBO was going on the business side. But there was a report out that they wanted to shoot it vertical for phones.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
If that many people are watching TV on their phones, they do not deserve an experience like
it's ridiculous. I'm glad that's kind of, that's gone out. People aren't, that's like, what was that? What was the name of the service that had the vertical shows on it again?
Quibi.
Quibi. Quibi.
And you know, it's because I could buy a brand new Roku TV that's bigger than the one I have now for like $300.
I know, it's crazy.
And it would cost me like $1,600 to buy a new phone. It's like freaking stupid.
Yeah, I know. Right?
Like it's so bizarre.
I mean, I get convenience, but come on, you need to consume this media at home on a TV and enjoy it. Don't be watching while you're at CVS. Come on, people.
Yeah. like I need to, and I mentioned Roku, a new Roku TV, because I've got the Best Buy tickets to like go buy one, because mine is so old I cannot watch Apple Plus on it. And it's hard for me to watch Apple Plus shows on my computer. And, you know, even like a screen that small, I'm just like, I hate this. Yeah. I don't want a laptop on my lap while I'm watching entertainment.
Anyway, well, that's the future. Soon we'll just have VR headsets, and some lady will be chopping our heads.
We'll be hanging out doing a podcast in some medieval world.
Yep, in the Sims world or something. We'll be on like Andy's floor.
I can smell your...
Oh, hello. All right, before we go any further, it's a kick show. Let's end it here, guys. Thank you, Gina. Thank you, Heath. Thank you, Ando. Does anyone have any final words to say? No? Okay.
I think we should all go pour one out for the bugs, just like Benedict Wong did at the end of the episode, and wrap this up.
Yeah. Humans are bugs.
All right, consider it done.
Peace out, everybody.